Joining us now from NBC Sports Bay Area, Ray Ratto covers everything. Ray, is there any sport you do not cover?
So far, I have failed to do dressage.
Have you done judo? Have you done sumo wrestling?
If you look at my picture on the website, you'll find that I may have engaged in it.
That's good, Ray. Hey, Ray, I know you're covering the A's-Astro series, and the A's went on a walk-off last night with Matt Olson. The A's, to me, are the most amazing story in baseball right now. I mean, you know, I remember in the beginning of the year, you know, I picked a couple of surprise teams in the playoffs, and the Phillies were one of my surprise teams. But the A's weren't even a team I considered at all as a possible playoff team. And the fact that they sit here today, a game behind the Astros, 24 games over 500, which is the fourth best record in baseball, is stunning. Was there any way to see this coming that we all missed?
No. So you're in the clear on this one. Several things happened at once, all of them to the benefit of the A's. One, they do hit home runs. They do generate runs. So, you know, that's something they've done on their own. But the American League is a weird place this year. There were nine teams that were selling at the trade deadline.
Yep.
And the only ones out of the playoffs right now that were not selling was Seattle. And Seattle's had a hard time keeping its pitching staff together. Houston has been ravaged by injuries because if you look at run differential, they should be running away with this division.
That's right, yep.
But the A's have also been really smart with a couple of acquisitions that flew below the ground under the radar. They got very lucky with Edwin Jackson, who's been with 27 teams, because he's come, and after a pretty rocky start, all of a sudden he's found out what works for him in this ballpark and on this team. And he's been close to lights out for them. And they don't have a lot of other people who are lights out. Sean Manaea is their best pitcher. Their second best pitcher this year is probably Trevor Cahill, who's a retread from the 2011 yep. A's. And the real advantage that they have, that they only built on, is they had a drop-dead closer in Blake Treinen, and a surprising, just sort of out-of-the-box setup guy in Lou Trevino. And so at the trade deadline, they basically said, you know what? Our bullpen's our strength. There isn't a lot of starting pitching out there. Let's just make the deepest bullpen God ever saw. So they went out and got Yuris Familia, and they went out and got Fernando Rodney, and they went out and got Sean Kelly. And none of them are going to close, but they all know how to pitch high leverage innings. So when you put all those things together, all of a sudden they catch fire in the middle of June, and they're, you know, the old baseball saying is they're too stupid to know pressure. I don't know if they're too stupid to know pressure, but whatever pressure there is, they have handled it as though it doesn't exist. Now, it's only going to get, you know, more pressurized as the season goes on, but they have handled themselves very much unlike a young team, which is what they are. They've just sort of, hey, we're good. Now we're proving it. Now the only thing left to do is prove it again. So I think that, you know, they've been lucky, but they've been good.
We're talking with Ray Ratto, NBC Sports Bay Area. Ray, you know, obviously attendance has always been a big topic when it comes to the A's. I know the attendance was a little better last night. Was it like 23, I think, after, you know, wasn't great against the Mariners. Overall, for the year at this point, they're up maybe 1,000 per game from last year, but not any kind of bump that you would expect for a team that's over 20 games, over 500. Is there, like, what can be done? I know the stadium's terrible, and, you know, what's the latest on that and any possibility of getting a new stadium, and what can be done? Is there anything, like, is the attendance, you know, is the best they can hope for mid-20s the rest of the way?
No, they can do better, but Oakland has always been very much a word-of-mouth town, which is you can market all you want, but they're not coming out till they're good and ready to come out. And part of that is because they've been taken for this walk before. For a team that's won, you know, one playoff series in this century. And then when they're bad, they're really bad.
Yep.
So they know disappointment. Secondly, they've been conditioned to think by the team that they want to see that they shouldn't come see them in that stadium because it's all so old and decrepit, even though, you know, it holds up every day like all the other stadiums do. And the other thing they've done is tried to move aggressively for most of the last decade. Well, if you tell people over and over again, we're going to get rid of your favorite players, we're going to play in a crappy stadium, and we're going to tell you how crappy it is on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to get out of here. Well, at some point, the fans are going to go, okay, we believe you. It's a crappy stadium. You're going to get rid of my favorite players, and you don't want to be here anyway. And they get out of the habit. And it takes a long time to get back into the habit almost anywhere. I mean, Cleveland took a long time last year, in 2016, I mean, to get, you know, the fever of the baseball team. It takes a long time to break buying habits. It takes a long time to make buying habits. And I think that's what we're looking at here. And this is sort of historically Oakland. I mean, they're going to come when, you know, in September, when they're still around.
Right.
But before then, they need to be shown that this isn't going to be another shell game.
Do you think, I mean, it seems impossible, you know, all along I've been saying the A's are playing great, and but there's no way they're going to catch the Astros. I still think, I will still be stunned if the A's win the West. Will you?
I won't be stunned, but not because I'm such a genius. It's because Houston's been ravaged with injuries.
Yeah,
that's true. The only part of their roster that hasn't been crushed by guys going on the DL is their starting pitching rotation. They still only use the five guys all year long. But their bullpen was in shambles for a while. Ken Giles decided to wander off into the woods. Altuve's been out. Correa's been out. Springer's been out. Those are the three, probably the three biggest pieces of their everyday lineup. And you're going to feel that. So I think that's mostly why the A's are as close as they are. Now, they might still be 24 games over, but I think they'd be 10 out, not 1 out, if Houston could have stayed healthy throughout the lineup.
Ray, on the other side of the Bay Area with the Giants, you know, they've been a pretty bad team since, what, the middle of 2016 when they fell apart the second half of that year. And I was a little surprised. I get, you know, unlike the A's, they're not a team that doesn't go for it. But I was a little surprised they went and got McCutchen and Longoria to a team I also didn't think would be good. And they've been just kind of middling. They're very likely not going to be a playoff team. Have they made some mistakes in going after so many veterans? Should they have traded away? I mean, I know that's not their style. What do you think of the way they've handled the last year or so?
They're hamstrung by the fact that they have nobody that's major league ready in their minor league system.
Yeah.
So they were basically trying to kick the rebuild date down the road a little while longer. That's why they went and got Longoria and McCutchen. Longoria's been a more difficult signing, I think, for them to swallow because, A, he got hurt, and, B, there's still a lot of money on his price tag, and it does not look like, you know, the Evan Longoria of old is ever going to surface. McCutchen
right.
was more of a one-year gamble, basically a stopgap, because they don't have outfielders in the pipeline. And, you know, you could say that that's their fault. But I understand why they did what they did this past offseason. But the bill's coming due, and it's probably going to start coming due this offseason, because they've got hard choices to make on a number of players. And because a lot of them, like Joe Panik, had trade value at the beginning of the year. He doesn't really have that now. Brandon Belt, it's hard to keep him healthy. I mean, he's a pretty good player when not, but, you know, he misses a fair amount of time. And Buster Posey is starting to fade as an everyday catcher and really as an everyday offensive impact player. So I think, you know, the day of reckoning is coming close, and at some point they're just going to have to go, you know what? We're going to have to rebuild this thing the way all the other big kids rebuild, which is, you know, start moving popular players, on the back end of their careers and move on to something else, because this isn't working. And it's not working. The bad thing about it is, at a time when everybody's walking, striking out, and hitting home runs, the only thing they've mastered is the striking out. They don't have very much power. Their pitching staff, they can't keep starters healthy, and their bullpen has been a shambles. So, you know, their record is probably better than it ought to be.
Yeah.
And it's in a National League, and I know this is a long answer, but it's in a National League where there's about three teams you want to watch, and everybody else is either mediocre or lousy.
Yeah, you know, I wonder what they will do with, you know, Bumgarner's obviously got one more year on the contract, right? You know, he's been injured a lot the last 2 years. He's still good, but not he's not quite at the top of his game that he once was. They're in a tricky spot with him. What do you think they do there?
They're going to keep him. The problem that they've got is they don't have a lot of pitchers that they can basically go to in their system to say, here, we can move Bumgarner and get a bunch of prospects or a live everyday player. They've lived on starting pitching for a long time, and now they don't have it in depth. So they're paying for that too. A lot of guys got old.
Yeah.
And, you know, they ran gambles on Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija. They got nothing out of Samardzija of any value except some innings eating. And Cueto can't stay healthy. So between those two things, their starting pitching, which used to be a go-to for them, is not very impressive right now. So I think they hold on to Bumgarner because they need to. But I would say everybody else is up for grabs because I think the rebuild is coming.
Ray, in sports radio in the Bay Area, what happened when a team moved? I'm curious about this. I was curious about this in San Diego too. Like, is there still a lot of Raiders talk generally, or we pretend? You know, they're still there now. But when they move, I should say, will there still be a lot of Raider talk? Will people ignore them? What do you think is going to happen when the Raiders are gone?
I think what's going to happen is there will still be that pocket of hardcore fans who will never give up the ghost.
Yeah,
but there won't be very many of them because this will be the second time they've left. And going into their penultimate year here, they're screwing up the Khalil Mack negotiations.
Yeah, that's right.
So there are a lot of people right now who are actually learning how to get pissed at them because they've always sort of put off the idea that they're leaving for Vegas. It's down the road. They're still here. You know, they have no hopes that they're going to stay. But the real anger and grief hasn't hit yet. But between firing their longtime radio play-by-play guy, Greg Papa, and now being unable to figure out why you can't pay your best player, all of a sudden they look like they're completely baffled, and they've lost a lot of the luster that hiring John Gruden should have delivered for them.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that, you know, if they struggle this year, if they're like 7-9 or 6-10 again, I think you're going to start to see people forget about anger and just walk away and just go, fine, you know, this is how you were for most of your time here. This is how you're leaving. We're done.
Does the Niner fans 100% believe in Jimmy Garoppolo?
They do now, but the opener's in Minnesota.
Yeah.
It'll be the first time he really gets cuffed around, I think. And they may still win the game, but Minnesota's a tough egg to deal with, and I would anticipate them losing. But it's not going to be until he starts to struggle with putting points on the board, because the other thing about Garoppolo is that they not only won five games in a row, they ran up some pretty big numbers against some pretty good defenses, including Jacksonville. So they're at the Garoppolo can do anything to anyone whenever he wants stage. But that stage ends for every quarterback, especially a quarterback who has only got a very small body of work and has now given every defensive coordinator in the league 8 months to figure out what he doesn't do well. So this year is going to be fascinating because this is where we find out just how good this guy really is. But for the moment, they have no reason not to think that, A, they swindled the Patriots, and, B, have the quarterback they need for the next 10 years.
Ray, appreciate it, man. I agree. Thanks for joining me.